when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Breaking and entering, drunk and disorderly, law and order. A former prosecutor and a defence lawyer, not your typical pairing. And the result? Conversations about crime and punishment that are guaranteed to get you thinking.
Welcome to Justice Matters with Joe Crowley and Lizzie Green, a brand new weekly podcast. Our episodes are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and YouTube. Check out our Instagram for clips at Justice Matters Pod. Enjoy the episode.
This episode contains descriptions of violence, death, including gun violence, mass shootings, and suicide. Listener discretion is advised. Good morning, Lizzie.
Good morning, Joe. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
I'm good.
I think the podcast has been going well. I really enjoyed our episodes on The Queen Against Carol.
Yes, I think everyone should follow and share.
Oh, like and share, like and subscribe.
Some reviews.
Oh, reviews.
Yes. Well, we love to read them.
Obviously, we're all about honesty, so put your honest feelings down, but
be kind.
Be kind.
That's what I say to my students in TVALs.
Yes. All right. Now, we're talking again today about something that you are very passionate about.
Well, I am at the moment. It's a new passion only because I have been seeing so much more in the news about gun violence.
Yes.
So it triggered my trigger.
No pun intended.
But it caught my interest because I guess I feel a little bit like it is more prevalent and that is concerning in public spaces particularly. So I had a little look into gun violence and where we're at.
Because we had this discussion and I was surprised to hear you say that you thought it was on the increase. But then as I mentioned, I got in touch with a solicitor friend of mine and she said she is noticing a lot more, certainly possession of weapons, that are charges that are coming up that she's representing people on. So yeah, certainly the anecdotal evidence I've heard sounds to bear out what you think from reading the headlines.
Well, I know you were a little bit skeptical. So I just did a little grab of news headlines just from the last 6 months, 6 or 7 months, that just show what we're sort of dealing with at the moment. So February this year, jail likely for Perth school shooter in Australian first case. January this year, man charged after allegedly shooting a car door during a road rage clash while on bail.
Wow.
December last year, Gold Coast police hunt gunman after alleged targeted drive-by shooting. That one was in Surface.
Oh, really?
And he just shot out of the car. Like, my kids are in Surface often. Oh, wow. Like, that is terrifying. November last year, WA community locked down and suspect in custody after man allegedly shot east of Perth. October 2023, Curtin University students offered counselling after man dies after bringing gun on campus. October last year, police searched for gunmen after shots fired at a Gold Coast home. I think that was a bikie-related death. Okay. I think he was just shot on his front lawn.
Mm.
August last year, daylight shootings and a vast labour force of organised crime, the challenge of ending Sydney's gangland war.
Mm.
And that was June, July last year. I think there was maybe five different shooting deaths.
Wow.
And two of them were mistaken identity, I'm pretty sure.
Wow.
I mean, you can't come back from that.
No.
And then, just to confirm my point, in July last year, Canterbury shooting, police say Sydney gun violence out of control after man shot dead in targeted homicide.
Wow. But we've also had, just in the last week, the two gun deaths of the couple down in Sydney. Well, who was shot by a New South Wales police officer.
But we haven't got the body. It's all speculation. So I didn't include that one.
Well, sorry, is it speculation? I thought he admitted to it, the officer.
Well, yes. And I had a look at that, and there's concerns there because he used his police-issued weapon.
Yes.
Which he checked out, committed the crime allegedly, and then returned it.
Yes.
But I didn't include it because they don't know where the bodies are. So he might be saying one thing, but he's vanquished them, like who knows what he did.
Yeah interesting,
but scary.
It happened in a house close to where my daughter lives in Sydney.
Oh my goodness.
And so she so they got home and there was crime scene tape around
wow
neighbor's house.
That is the saddest story actually.
And apparently the shooting occurred in the house, so it is very sad.
So yes, definitely I think we're hearing more about it. And so then I was thinking, gosh, why is this getting my attention? And anyone our age or around our age would know that we have had low gun violence for many, many years since 1996. And so then I was talking to my kids and I said to them, do you know what the Port Arthur massacre was? And two of them had heard of it and two of them were like, no, never heard of it. And I thought, wow, that's significant, because for me at least, that was a massive moment in time that had such positive outcomes. And, you know, we talk about Australia being safe, and it is generally, but then I hear these little tiny reports coming through, you know, and anecdotally, a friend of mine who lives in Parkwood, police stopped to do a welfare check on a car that was parked at the end of a cul-de-sac, just in a residential street, and there were two people in the car. They pulled a gun on the police and fired a shot.
Wow.
Just for nothing.
Yes.
So to me, I think we need to remember what led us to our strict gun laws and try to make sure we don't let any of that good work be eroded, because it's such a point of, you know, pride that we are good with our gun violence. I mean, Kamala Harris last year, after one of the gun shootings, mass shootings in the US, said we need to be like Australia in effect, you know?
Yeah. Sorry, I was just going to say, I recall that. I agree. It was such a seminal moment. The Port Arthur massacres was such a horrific incident. And I didn't realize, I saw something a couple of years ago now which talked about the level of gun violence before it. And I recall the Hoddle Street massacre. I don't know if you remember that, shooting on the streets of Melbourne. But they named a whole series of others that I didn't really remember that had occurred in Melbourne. And so they had said that mass shootings in Australia were reasonably regular up and until after the Port Arthur massacre, and then they bring in these really, really strict gun laws. And it wasn't an easy thing. I don't know if you're going to talk about the actual political movement to create the strict gun laws, but it was not popular.
Well, I remember the massacre. I was at college actually at the time. I don't think I was following the politics so much, but I did read that John Howard, who was the Prime Minister who instigated all of the change, at one of the public appearances, he wore a bulletproof vest.
I remember the photo. You can clearly see the bulletproof vest through his coat that he was wearing. Yeah, I mean, I remember following the politics. It was very, very controversial.
I thought there was generally a lot of support.
Well, I think there was strongly held opinions on both sides. I mean, it wasn't that everyone was against it. It was two very low vocal lobbies one against one for, and John Howard really sort of pushed it all through.
Well, let's go back for anyone who is young and may not know. I thought we'd talk about what happened in Port Arthur.
Yes. We should probably start with where is Port Arthur? Because a lot of people might have heard of it. It was and is becoming again a popular tourist attraction.
In Tasmania.
Yes.
That's right. So this happened back in April 1996. Mm. So I'm going to talk you through the day and the offender.
Yes.
Okay. So 28-year-old Martin Bryant, who was a Hobart man, armed himself with three high-powered automatic firearms, huge quantity of ammunition, and then he drove himself to Port Arthur.
Mm.
He began the day by killing an elderly couple who were the owners of Port Arthur's Seascape guest house. Mm. There are some theories that the killings in that case were Bryant's retaliation against that couple because they refused his father to be in the guest house or something like that, some personal motivation.
Mm.
Bryant's father later died by suicide, which Bryant apparently believed was because of his depression of not being able to get that guest house or whatever it was.
Okay.
Anyway, so he shot them and killed them. Then he took himself off to have lunch at the Broad Arrow Cafe, which was located at the site of the historic Port Arthur prison colony, which, as you said, was a tourist destination. He removed a Colt AR-15 rifle. Mm. And I should preface this by saying I actually have never held a gun.
Oh, wow.
And okay. I talk about these guns, but I don't really have any clear pictures in my head of what they are. But I'm imagining something quite big with a rifle.
Yes.
Yes.
Long gun.
And so he just began shooting in the cafe. Mm. He killed 22 people in rapid succession. Mm. He then went to the parking lot where he continued his shooting spree. He killed the drivers of two tour buses, some of their passengers, including a mother and her two young children, among others. On his way out of the parking lot, he shot four people in a BMW. He then took that car to a nearby petrol station. He shot another woman. He took a man hostage and drove back to the Seascape guest house where he'd started his shooting. And then there was an 18-hour standoff with police. Mm. They obviously had all been called to the scene by this stage and knew where he was located.
Yes.
He then set the guest house on fire, ran outside, and was captured. It's believed he had killed that hostage sometime earlier.
Ah, okay.
So I don't think he ever intended to release him.
Yeah. So. Certainly one of the things that strikes me about that description is the indiscriminate nature of the shooting. My recollection, and you might be getting to this, is that his motive was just to kill as many people as he could.
Yeah.
And if that is your motive, then women, children, doesn't matter. You are just shooting people who are close to you so that you can kill them, and you're looking for people to shoot. That kind of violence is just so terrifying to me. It really is. That it's not like they've got some political motive and they're looking for some, you know, particular, you know, faction to fire at, or that they are just looking for people to kill. I remember being absolutely horrified by the descriptions that came out of the Arrow Cafe.
And in my research, I read a lot about mass shootings, and there's some uncertainty as to what actually constitutes a mass shooting because there are different definitions depending on where you look, but it is at least three, maybe four people shot in one episode, usually in a public place.
Yes.
And so mass shootings in Australia are now very rare, but, you know, we hear about them all the time in the US, but this was the country's worst mass shooting we'd ever had.
Yeah, well, I think it was the world's worst, wasn't it, for a time?
I did see somewhere it said that, and then another place said countries. I didn't want to overinflate it.
No.
And I think since then America have certainly trumped us.
Yes. Well, I think there was one in the Netherlands or...
Well...
You're going to get to that one?
No, I'm not going to talk about that, but Norway was one place. So we'll come to it, but some places in the country, in the world, have had a horrific episode like we had in Port Arthur, and immediately there was change to gun laws. Other places, like the US, have mass shootings with an alarming frequency and cling tight to their gun rights. Yes. So it's very difficult to comprehend, and I think really important that we not forget why we have gun laws and therefore no mass shootings.
Yeah. You might be going to get this, so don't let me derail you, but I mean, I know you say you don't know much about guns. I don't know a lot either, but sounds like I know a bit more than you do. But it was also the type of guns that he was using that was problematic, because they were semi-automatic weapons, weren't they? Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that, I will get to what was outlawed, but there was huge justification for why automatic, semi-automatic weapons were outlawed.
Yeah.
And it's because what's the purpose of them apart from mass destruction?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
If you're a legitimate hunter or farmer, you don't need an automatic weapon, or the you are shooting for a purpose.
Yes. So, well, just for the listeners, and maybe for you, Lizzie, I thought we should explain the difference between automatic and semi-automatic.
Oh, please do.
So an automatic weapon is one where you hold your finger on the trigger and it keeps firing, so you can spray a lot of bullets very quickly. A semi-automatic weapon is one where you have to keep pulling the trigger for it to fire, but you don't have to reload it. Between every time you pull the trigger, it'll fire a shot. And they tend to have large sort of cartridges of ammunition, so you can get through a lot of shots very quickly again, as opposed to something like a revolver, where you've got six shots. Every time you pull the trigger, it fires, but then after six, you've finished. You know, and then you get to the...
Do you still have to load up the next bullet?
Once you've finished your six in a revolver, or your eight, go up to 12. Yes, you do. But
they could shoot in quick succession.
Every time they pull the trigger, it'll fire. Yes.
Okay.
And then, but these semi-automatic rifles tend to have magazines, so they'll have 50 bullets in a magazine, so they can let off 50 bullets, and you could do a bullet a second, so you could do 50 bullets in a minute easily. Automatic weapons fire even faster than that. So
a lot of my knowledge of guns comes from James Patterson and Lee Child novels.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And they seem to just be spraying bullets everywhere.
Everywhere. Well, if the TV show Jack Reacher was anything to go by, they absolutely were. Yeah. And so different from your rifle, where you have to reload after every shot, or you have to at least get the bullet into the chamber by cocking it or by pulling a bolt action or a lever action, where after you've shot there's a sort of some couple of seconds while you then get the next bullet in. So those kind of weapons are the kind of weapons we have in Australia now for farmers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But as you say, I mean, who has any cause to use a machine gun an automatic weapon in Australia?
No one.
No one.
At all.
No.
So what else can I tell you about Bryant? I mean, it was a massive emergency response. It was national and international news. It was devastating. So he did not unusually commit suicide. So a lot of mass shooters end their shooting spree by killing themselves. So he did not. So he was charged. He did initially plead not guilty. Good luck with that. He changed his plea at the last minute, or towards the trial approaching, and he was sentenced to 35 life terms.
Yes.
So life in prison, never to be released.
Yeah. So that's an unusual sentence in Australia. We tend, even for people who've killed multiple victims, to give them some sort of time. At some point they'll be released, but occasionally people get never to be released, and he's one of them.
Now, to be fair, or to give the full picture of Bryant, there are some records that say that he was intellectually disabled. He did have a history of erratic behavior. He left school early. He was living off a disability pension. Then it seems that he got a job as a handyman for an elderly, wealthy lady, and they became quite close. And when she died in a car accident, which sub-threads of discussions some people attribute to Bryant, but he was never charged with that.
Okay.
But she left him all of her wealth. And so he then became independently wealthy. Okay. And it's thought that at that time he started to collect his weapons.
Right.
Also, his father committing suicide apparently was a trigger for that as well. So he was stockpiling guns.
Yes.
He is still in prison.
Yes.
Still alive.
Yes.
There was a forensic psychiatrist who assessed him at the time of the offending, but also I think more recently, or, you know, since then.
Yes.
And said that far from being a threatening criminal who masterminded a massacre, he was merely dim, pathetic, and angry. This is someone who the only way he felt he could be something in the world was to take revenge on the world and kill the helpless and the innocent.
Yeah. And, I mean, I think isn't that the point with automatic weapons, that you do not need to be an SAS-trained person to kill multiple people, because you these weapons will just do it for you. The odds are. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw a photo of him in prison and, you know, he's looking quite well padded, quite happy. Apparently he enjoys chocolate.
Don't we all?
In prison, you know, so.
There's not a lot to do, I suspect, in prison, so watch TV.
No, but I think, yes, he'll never be released, but is that really, you know.
You advocating the death penalty, Lizzie?
I'm not. I am not advocating the death penalty. But then you read about someone like that and the senseless deaths of so many people and you just think he's just living his life. Yeah, he's in prison, but he doesn't even seem that unhappy about it.
Okay, well, this is probably something for another podcast, but, you know, the punishment is taking away your freedom of movement. It's not how you're treated in jail. We don't torture people. You can't put them in jail and then treat them badly, because that's torture. So, okay, yes, he has 3 meals a day and a roof over his head for the rest of his life, provided for on the taxpayer's dime.
$117,000 a year to house someone in prison.
Yes. You know, that's because we don't torture people and we don't put them to death. So he can't move around like you and I can in the community. I might have seen that same article, and what I remember the photo of him. And what I took from it is apparently he writes to the media organisations all the time when there is a mass shooting in the United States to give his sort of view of it.
Oh, great. Some kind of an expert. What they did right and wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. But the media organisations have an agreement never to publish anything that he writes. So you never hear about him.
Oh, I love that.
And so, because there's apparently this agreement or media blackout on him. Yeah.
Well, and also I'm going to talk about some mass shootings from other countries, but apparently it was after one of the UK mass shootings, the Dunblane shooting.
Oh, yeah.
That he got this idea.
Yes.
So we flagged it a little bit, but the reaction politically to this was swift and fierce.
Yes.
And John Howard, I think, had not been Prime Minister for very long at that stage.
96, I think that's right.
But he just went in and said, right, that's it. This is untenable. Mm. We are going to change the laws.
Yes. Having said that, he had come in with a massive majority. So, you know, he had some political capital to do something like this.
But still, I think it takes, I mean, we aren't America, but I think it takes a strong person, even with a lot of support, to be so controversial and so definite about legislative change. Mm. Like this was a big deal.
Oh, yeah. And was happy to go around the country speaking in public about it, which is something you don't often see prime ministers do, you know, and hence him having to wear feeling that he had to wear a bulletproof vest on at least one occasion.
Yeah.
You know, he really sort of took it on himself personally to convince the Australian people that this was what needed to be done.
Well, and I think the National Firearms Agreement, the NFA, was drafted just a month after Port Arthur occurred. And the point of it was to sharply restrict legal ownership of firearms in Australia. It also created a registry of all guns owned in the country.
Yes.
Which, as we'll learn, it was maintained individually by the states.
Yes.
And now that's become a bit of an issue, which I'll get to.
Yes.
And it introduced the requirement that a permit be obtained for all new firearm purchases, as well as creating a ban on particular guns such as automatic and semi-automatic rifles and shotguns.
Yes.
So a lot of reform.
Yes. I just wanted to, for those of people who probably are not familiar with our federation, our Commonwealth Federation, I mean, part of the problem is, wasn't it, that gun laws are really all state-based. They're not a Commonwealth responsibility, so they had to have this agreement between the states about how to regulate guns. And then, as you point out, there's gun registers, but they're maintained by the states, and that created its own problems or has created its own problems. Yes. Yeah.
The other thing that Howard did with this reform was a mandatory buyback scheme.
Yeah.
So I think that probably sweetened it a little bit for a lot of the public. He said that Australia would take away all the guns that had been declared illegal, but would pay the people who were surrendering them a fair price in exchange.
Yeah.
And there was a legal amnesty offered for anyone who handed in illegally owned guns.
Yes.
So they wouldn't get the compensation,
yeah,
but they wouldn't be charged for having them.
Yeah.
And so
my recollection was that was more successful than the government expected, and they and so many more guns appeared than they really
knew. Do you want to
know
how many they got?
Hit me with it.
About 650,000 legally owned guns were seized and destroyed, which one estimate thinks that was about 20% of all privately owned guns in Australia at that time. And between 96 and 2015, at least 1 million privately owned firearms were seized or surrendered and decommissioned.
Wow, yeah. I mean, so because this is the part of the problem, you go, well, we'll outlaw guns, and you have to, you know, have a gun license from now on, and you can't own, you know, these types of guns. But what does that do with all the guns currently in circulation? So they have to try and get rid of or minimise the amount in circulation.
Yes.
As well.
And I remember my dad had a rifle or something.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but we lived in Ipswich at the time.
Yeah.
And no, we didn't. But he'd had it in Ipswich. Anyway, he had to take it down. And I remember Mum was really stressed about him actually putting it in the car and driving it down. Yeah, like she just didn't even want it visible, you know.
Yeah.
So
we had a 22, a beautiful little 22 bolt action that we used to go and fire, you know, shoot cans with. And we had to give that up. I was really disappointed with that. We didn't have to. I mean, Dad could have got a license, but we didn't use it that often, so we just handed it in. But
that description, a beautiful little,
lovely little
22.
Gun,
22,
lovely little 22. Right. Yeah, but I mean, there's so two people, you and I. Neither of us come from farming families. Both of us sort of effectively grew up in cities or big towns, and yet both our families had guns.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah,
and actually, I was talking to a colleague who said, when this all came out, he had to get a permit, and he was friends with the local police officer.
Mm.
And the police officer said, all right, well, here's the test. You've got to pass the test, fill out the form. And he goes, well, here are the answers. Gave him the answers as well. And then when he got divorced, he forgot he had the gun. The permit had lapsed. He ended up getting into trouble about
really?
It.
Really?
Yeah. Was not an amicable split,
no.
I don't think.
So I don't want to jump ahead, but you're probably going to get to it because where I see guns mostly now is in domestic violence proceedings.
Yes.
But maybe we'll get to that.
Well, I haven't. Yes, we do have some statistics on who's most at risk, and definitely women and children are
yes.
in the domestic context.
Yeah.
I'm not specifically talking about any cases
no.
to do with domestic violence.
But what I see, because I mean, I said to you before the show that I don't actually see many gun-related offences. And if you do, it's a possess gun where somebody's got a license but they haven't stored it correctly, or their license has lapsed, or I've helped people with applications for licenses, or they've had their license cancelled. But I see it all the time in domestic violence, because as soon as there's any kind of domestic violence, even a temporary order, automatically weapons licenses are suspended, so people have to then hand their guns in.
Well, and that sounds great in theory, but I mean, this brings me to the Wyambilla shooting of the police officers and the Good Samaritan neighbour, which I will come to.
Yes.
But there had been a revoked gun licence for one of those offenders, but because the states don't talk to each other, the police didn't know. And it's similar with DV. There's not even sharing of AVOs and that sort of thing between states. So the chance of someone in another state knowing, oh, well, this person has a lapsed license or it's been revoked. People just don't know.
Yeah.
So that's where I think we need to head.
Yeah.
So Australia did very well with that gun reform. And it did make a difference in terms of statistics and deaths as a result of gun violence. And I will get to that. But before I do, I wanted to just talk about a couple of other countries who were similar to Australia in that there was one event, one mass shooting that resulted in legislative change. So the UK actually had two mass shootings that changed the laws and then resulted in even further restrictions. So I wanted to talk about them. So semi-automatic weapons were banned in 87 for the UK. And that was after the Hungerford shooting in Berkshire and Wiltshire in England. I'm probably going to butcher all of these names. No. So in that case, that was a 27-year-old guy called Michael Ryan, and he began his killing spree in Wiltshire. These were all a long time ago, but I feel like understanding what happened and why it triggered the change might be the refresher that we need to ensure we keep the restrictions. So he was described as a firearm obsessive. He was able to legally purchase the semi-automatic rifles and the handgun he used in the killing spree from a dealer, so legitimately, because he held certificates in weapons and he had membership at two local gun clubs, so he satisfied the criteria. But his certificate was conditional that he could only use the weapons on approved ranges.
Yes.
That did not apply to him in his mind, obviously. No. And so what I actually found with this case, because there was a lot of reports, but then I stumbled across the official crime report of the chief constable of the Thames Valley Police that was written to the Secretary of State for the Home Department. And there was, besides the legislative change, there was also questions in this case because the officers who attended weren't armed. There wasn't this habit of police officers in the UK arming themselves routinely, and so they were sitting targets for this guy.
Well, that's been an issue for the English police, UK police for a long time because they weren't armed. But, you know, there's that old saying, the way to get shot is to carry a gun. The idea is, you know, you don't shoot an unarmed man. So if you're an officer and you've got a gun and you're facing somebody with a gun, they're more likely to shoot you. So that, I think that's the rationale behind it. And I think even up until quite recently they weren't armed. British police weren't armed,
so you know, with a gun, battens, didn't
had
they?
A baton, yeah. But no, no
but to
firearms.
Me, I find that crazy now when we think about the prevalence of gun ownership, which I was not fully aware of until this week, but also just the history of shootings, you know, you can't be sure who has a gun anymore and who doesn't.
Yeah, well, particularly in the United States. I mean, I think you'd be pretty unlucky to have somebody pull a gun on you in Australia, but...
But this is, I mean, it literally happened on those two police officers.
Yeah.
Like it does happen. But the drive-by shooting.
But I think the reason we're talking about it is because it's very unusual.
I know, but sadly becoming more common. Yeah. Anyway, so this little town where the shooting occurred was just a little tiny market town. It had a population of 5,000, a really stable, close-knit community, low crime rate, high standard of living. As an indication of its law-abiding tradition, it had not witnessed the act of murder for 111 years.
Wow.
The last one was in 1876 when two police officers were shot and killed by poachers.
Oh.
So that's the setting of this mass shooting. Yes. And it was policed by two sergeants and 12 constables. So not a huge police force.
No.
So he, Ryan, the accused was, or the offender was an only child. His father died of cancer a couple of years before this. He lived alone with his mother. He left school at 16 with a very poor academic record. He had a number of short-term jobs as a gardener handyman. For most of the year prior to the offending, he was unemployed.
It sounds very similar to Bryant, doesn't it?
It's unknown how he spent his time most recently before the shooting, but there was evidence he had visited his shooting clubs. He had no previous criminal record, no known record of medical or mental problems. But he was described as a loner, a man without any friends apart from his mother.
Mm.
And he seemed to live in some kind of part fantasy world. By the day of the shooting, he had lawfully acquired 3 shotguns and 5 other firearms, all purchased between December 86 and August 87. So a bit like Martin, right? He was stockpiling these guns. So his first victim on the day was a 33-year-old woman who was picnicking with her 2 little toddlers. They were 2 and 4. He abducted her at gunpoint. There was some question, was he going to sexually assault her? But he didn't, but he took her to another area. He laid out a ground sheet and then he shot her 13 times in the back.
Jeepers.
He then drove towards Hungerford. He stopped at a service station where he fired a weapon at the cashier through the glass screen, fired again at point blank when he missed her the first time. He then went to his home, which he set on fire, tried to start his car. It wouldn't start, so he shot the car. He then shot 2 more people at the rear of their home before he ran up the street. He shot and injured 2 more people before continuing on shooting and killing another man who was out walking with his entire family. Police arrived on the scene. He immediately shot a police officer in his car. Then he shot and injured a mother and a daughter in their car. He shot an 84-year-old man who was just in his back garden of his home. He shot and injured another man on the footpath, shot and injured an ambulance driver, shot and killed another man driving past and injured his passenger. His mum then arrived to try and reason with him. He shot her.
Jeepers.
Killed her. He then started walking across a set of playing fields, and over the next short period of time he shot and killed 8 more people and shot and injured another 7.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Horrendous. So that all took him 58 minutes. In that time, 83 emergency calls were made to the police and 22 calls were made to the ambulance service. So he ended up inside a school. He locked himself in a school and they figured out he was there. So the first responders attended. He began communicating with one of the officers outside. He confirmed his identity. He talked about himself and about the shootings. He expressed regret about the death of his mother and his dog. And said of having killed all the others, it's funny, I've killed all those people, but I haven't got the guts to blow my own brains out.
Oh, okay.
But he did then sometime later shoot himself.
So
at the time, that was Britain's most deadly mass murder and really the first crime of its kind in the UK. So there was a lot of attention paid to his background and mental health, the specifics of gun regulations and that tradition of unarmed police officers, because all of that was highlighted as problematic in this case. The conservative government of the time, reacting to public opinion, passed the Firearms Amendment Act of 1988. Certain weapons were moved into the prohibited class of weapons and regulations about permits and that sort of thing were enforced.
I mean, interesting, the so he has to be a member of a gun club and he's supposed to keep his weapons at the gun, or he's only supposed to fire them at the gun club. I think, I mean, that's quite similar to what we have now. If you're a member of a gun club, you can, that's, I mean, if you just want to apply for a license here, a gun, you won't get what, you have to have a reason.
Good and reason.
Yeah, good reason. And then, so it's usually that you're a farmer or that you're a member of a gun club, but then you have to keep your gun at the gun club. And so, I mean, it sounds
is
like.
Is that right? If you have a licensed weapon and you're not a farmer.
No, sorry. You could keep it at your house, but you have to have it in a proper gun locker. Right. And so I think a lot of, well, the people that I know who own guns are members of gun clubs, and they just leave the guns at the gun club. It's just easier, yeah. You know, because if it's at your house, there's the regulation around it's so strict, and, you know, you can, if you fall foul of it, they'll fine you and take your gun license. But it sounds like there was a higher level of regulation in the UK in 87 than there was in Australia.
Yeah, I think there was, but they felt even that was not enough.
Mm.
Yeah.
And interesting that there's that similarity in personality between, well, Michael Ryan and
do you
Martin
know what?
Bryan.
I think, I mean, there is a bit of a stereotype of mass shooters, particularly school shooters in the US. I don't know if you're a Jodi Picoult fan. She writes amazing books, and one of them was called 19 Minutes, and it was about a school shooting.
Yeah.
And the perpetrator in that case, which she does phenomenal research for her novels, fit that same kind of profile, obviously younger, but this idea of a loner, no real red flags as such, but just didn't really fit in. And I mean, I don't think that's necessarily the case in all shootings.
I think it's, well, I think it's become a stereotype because it is very common. I mean, it's not 100% right. I mean, there's that famous shooting, I know, I can't remember, it happened in the 70s in the United States, and it was a girl, and the Boomtown Rats, one of the great bands from England in the 70s, wrote "I Don't Like Mondays." That song's about the mass shooting. Yeah, because she, when the police finally catch up with her and say, "Why did you shoot your classmates?" She said, "I don't like Mondays." Yeah. And so the Boomtown Rats write this song, "I Don't Like Mondays." Yeah, listen to the words. But so that was a mass shooter in the States who doesn't fit that stereotype because it was a female.
Yeah.
But usually it's young male, you know, with few friends. Because, I mean, if you've got connections to people, you are, you know, you're, less, I suppose, likely. Less likely to just see them as things that can be shot.
I know. So anyway, so that was the start of stricter gun laws in the UK.
Yep.
Then we go forward to 96 and the Dunblane school massacre occurred, and this was really sad.
Mm.
I mean, they all are, but
yes.
So on this morning in March 96, a former shopkeeper and scoutmaster called Thomas Hamilton drove into the parking lot of the Dunblane Primary School. Mm. This is in Scotland. He cut the cables on a nearby telephone pole and then entered the school grounds approaching the gym. He was carrying 4 handguns and 743 rounds of ammunition.
Wow. Yep.
So one of the teachers, Gwen Mayer, had just taken 29 of her elementary age students to the gym for PE. He entered the gym and just immediately opened fire. He wounded the PE teacher, the teaching assistant, and injured and killed several children. The teachers took shelter inside a cupboard in the gym, bringing in as many of the kids as they could. Hamilton continued his shooting. When an adult and an older student tried to look inside the gym to find out what was going on, he fired towards them. He then left the gym, firing toward the library cloakroom, into a mobile classroom. In that classroom, the students were lying on the floor at their teacher's instruction. He returned to the gym, dropped the gun he had been using, and chose another one, which he used to kill himself.
Mm.
So that entire attack took place over a period of less than 5 minutes.
Mm.
The teacher, Mayer, and 15 children were killed outright, and another child died in hospital. A further 15 people, most of them children, were wounded, and a motive for that massacre was never established.
Mm.
Police arrived about 9 minutes after they received the emergency call. He'd managed to raise that alarm despite the sabotaged telephone cables. I mean, when he does something like that, you have to think, did he have a longer-term plan in mind initially?
Yeah. But, I mean, why primary school kids? I just don't understand that.
And so the laws at that time stated that private ownership certificates for handguns and rifles could be issued if they had a secure personal storage facility, they were of good character, and could show good reason for possessing a firearm. And he didn't, you know, fail any of those checks. He was legally able to acquire the firearms. He was described by the district commissioner as having a persecution complex and delusions of grandeur. He was asked to resign by the Scout movement. He was issued a firearm certificate in 77, which authorized him to purchase a .22 target pistol, hold 1,000 rounds of ammunition, and buy 500 rounds at any one time. So it was pretty broad rights there.
But I mean, he was a scoutmaster. I mean, he sounds like he's somebody who'd have a blue card nowadays. You know, somebody who's
100%.
You know, entitled to work with children, no criminal history.
And then he targets children.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe because he was fired as a scoutmaster. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so as a result of that crime, there was a local campaign which sought to revise the laws. It attracted more than 750,000 signatures. It was backed by Sean Connery, the actor, who lent his voice to a commercial advocating for a total ban on handguns.
Yes.
Bob Dylan gave his consent to a new recording of Knocking on Heaven's Door, which featured relatives of the victims. And while the campaign didn't secure a total handgun ban, it drove the government into action, and John Major, the Prime Minister at the time, passed more amendments which banned high caliber pistols.
Yes.
And security requirements for gun clubs were expanded. Interestingly, a 2021 survey of British citizens found that 76% of British citizens would like to see gun ownership laws further tightened.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yes. So UK, Australia react to these tragic events, tightening the gun laws. Can you take some more? Canada?
Has there been a mass shooting in Canada? I thought they were the world's nicest people or something.
Well, this was in 89, and I cannot speak French, but in Montreal's École Polytechnique.
Sounds good to me.
So a polytech college. A fellow entered a classroom with a rifle. He separated the women and the men. He ordered the men to leave. He asked the women whether they knew why they were there. Instead of replying to that, one student asked who he was, and he answered that he was fighting feminism. Another student protested that they were women studying engineering, not feminists. They weren't fighting against men. They weren't marching to prove they were better, and he responded by opening fire on the students from left to right, calling women a bunch of feminists, shooting 9 of them, killing 6 of them, and then moved through the college shooting just women, more women. So during his 20-minute rampage, he murdered 14 women, injured 10 others, and 4 men before he took his own life. And in his suicide note, he blamed feminists for ruining his life. The note contained a list of 19 radical feminists who he said he would have liked to kill, but he ran out of time. So they were lucky.
And they didn't live in Montreal. I don't
know. No, it included, well, it included the names of well-known women in Quebec, journalists, television personalities, union leaders. He had purchased his gun less than a month earlier in a sports store in Montreal. He had told the clerk he was going to use it to hunt small game.
And do we know his background? Young, loner,
male? No, not really. Just
anti-women.
Feminist. So after that, the Coalition for Gun Control was formed in Canada. Their efforts contributed to the 95 adoption of Bill C-68, the federal firearm control legislation, and it included mandatory registration of all firearms, licensing for firearm owners, a national registry for all weapons, background checks and verification processes and controls on ammunition sales. So, I mean, you see this theme, something horrific is the straw that breaks the camel's back, and the government gets into action. New Zealand didn't need that kind of reform really for a very long time. There wasn't a lot of gun violence in New Zealand, but you would remember the Christchurch shooting in 2019. So that was where a mosque was the target of a gunman. There was about 500 people gathered to worship on this day in 2019, and a man in a gold Subaru, as they say in New Zealand, pulled up outside. He had a legally obtained arsenal of two semi-automatic weapons, two shotguns, a lever-action firearm, and ammunition. And the big thing with this one was he live-streamed
his
mass shooting. His subsequent actions resulted in 101 casualties, 51 people killed, 50 more injured.
I mean, semi-automatic weapons in a small space, large crowd, you know.
There's no escape.
No.
Media reports highlighted the lack of difficulty he had in passing police vetting procedures to obtain a gun license and loopholes that he may have used to maximise his arsenal. So while the guns were obtained legally, their post purchase modifications were illegal.
Does he commit suicide?
You know, he was captured, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. It doesn't say he committed suicide. He had been active in alt-right chat rooms. He was not on any watch list. He had no previous criminal or mental health history, and he'd raised little suspicion among those who knew him.
Yes.
But so within a week of that attack, the New Zealand government announced a ban on military-style semi-automatic weapons with legislation to restrict semi-automatic firearms in magazines with greater than 10 rounds. And that was passed in Parliament with 119 out of a possible 120 votes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That poor 120th parliamentarian, what were they, in the toilet?
Maybe they were a farmer.
Yeah, okay.
All right, so did it all make a difference? Yes, it did. Amnesty International says that of gun violence generally, more than 600 people die globally as a result of gun violence. It disproportionately affects people of colour, men and boys in deprived communities, other marginalised groups, and those at risk of domestic and family violence. So in Australia, we had our first mass shooting, so more than three people dying, in 2014. So Port Arthur occurred in 96. The US, there were more than 600 mass shootings in 2023.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that statistic alone is so persuasive.
Yes.
That slogan that people try to say is, you know, guns don't kill people.
Yeah.
You can't kill them with a gun if you don't have one.
No.
The UK now have one of the lowest gun-related deaths in the developed world. So there are about five guns per 100 people in Britain, except in Northern Ireland. The rate is higher. And the gun homicide rate in the UK is about 0.7 per million, which is one of the lowest.
Yes.
But mass shootings in the UK haven't disappeared altogether. So in 2010, a 52-year-old taxi driver shot his twin brother and 11 other people before killing himself. And just last year in Plymouth, a 22-year-old crane operator killed five people with a shotgun.
Yeah.
But concerns had been raised about his mental health prior to that attack.
Yep.
And his gun license was revoked in 2020. But his weapons had been returned to him the next year upon completion of an anger management course.
Wow. Mm. Okay.
Now, one thing that I found interesting was Germany.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So there are tough gun control laws in Germany. Mm. They were rigorously tightened after two horrendous school shootings in 2002 and 2009. Mm. But gun ownership in Germany was already treated as a privilege rather than an inherent right, as it is in the US. Mm. And it was difficult to own a firearm. It's even more difficult now. It is now the only country in the world where anyone younger than 25 has to pass a psychiatric exam before they are allowed to apply for a gun license.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone applying for a gun license has to wait for a year, pass rigorous tests, and have a legitimate reason for owning a gun.
Yep.
So if we think back to the Dunblane guy, he got his the month before.
Yes.
Maybe if he'd had to wait 12 months.
Yeah.
You know, they tightened their rules after these school shootings. After 2009, even experienced hunters and sports shooters with gun permits could be required by police at any time to take psychiatric tests if they were caught drink driving or displaying erratic behaviour of any kind.
Mm.
Police are allowed to visit the homes of registered gun owners for unannounced tests to make sure the guns are locked up and properly stored.
Yeah, well, I wonder. I mean, in Australia, obviously, you need a reasonable suspicion to get a search warrant. But, I mean, if you know somebody's a registered gun owner, I mean, it mightn't be enough just to that to cause you to have reasonable suspicion. But
well, and look, I'm not saying Germany are the
gold standard
for individual rights, perhaps, yes. but good gun laws.
Yes.
But, I mean, having said that, just last year in March, they reported that German gun laws should be further tightened because there was a mass shooting that resulted in the deaths of 7 people, including an unborn child, at a Jehovah's Witness hall in Hamburg.
Okay.
He was armed with a semi-automatic firearm. He was seeking some kind of revenge after falling out over a book with people in the Jehovah's Witness community. Interestingly, police had carried out a search of his storage
facility
requirements.
They'd
gone to his home and there'd been an anonymous complaint.
Yeah.
So they went to his home. In his gun safe was just a lone bullet and not his weapons, but they issued him only a verbal warning and didn't follow up further.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So they're calling for tighter laws again.
Yeah. But I mean, that's a discretionary thing. So the police turn up, they've got a discretion whether to charge or not. You know, I mean, it's hard to change that discretion.
Yeah.
I mean, you can tell police, listen, you've got to go harder on people, but. Yeah, I mean, tightening the laws isn't going to help that because you still have the police officer turning up deciding whether they should charge or not. I mean, I don't know, maybe the guy was really personable and chatted to the police and thought he's probably all right.
Yeah, maybe.
It's his first offence, first time he's ever done it. We'll let him off.
Well, and they weren't seeing guns lying around.
Yeah.
It was just the bullet. But anyway, it was a mistake in hindsight. I wonder
if they said, where are your guns?
The US, I looked up mass shootings in the US and told you that statistic.
Yeah.
To just make it clearer, at least 40,167 people have died from gun violence in the US in 2023, which is an average of almost 118 deaths per day.
And can we just juxtapose that against Australia? I mean, how many gun deaths in Australia do we have? It's like 9 or something.
So low in comparison. To be fair, about half of those deaths are suicide.
Oh, interesting.
By gun. But I mean, in Australia, the rate of suicide by gun also dramatically dropped after our gun laws came in.
Yeah.
So that's a saving as well, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
The US has surpassed 39,000 deaths from gun violence every year since 2014. So the number of people is...
Yeah, just shocking.
Shocking.
I have a friend who's an orthopedic surgeon, so a bone doctor. So, you know, if you need a knee replacement or you break your arm and it needs to be set with pins and all that kind of, so that's the kind of thing he does. So he had a friend who was an orthopedic surgeon in the United States and that guy invited him to a conference. My friend goes to this conference of orthopedic surgeons in the United States and his friend, the doctor, is giving the keynote address. And he starts by putting up on the visual, you know, the visualizer, an x-ray of a femur of somebody who'd been shot in the thigh. So the femur is your thigh bone, one of the biggest bones in the body. And apparently when you're shot in the thigh, your femur, I mean, I don't even think it necessarily has to hit your femur, it just shatters. Like it doesn't crack, it shatters. And he put this up for all these American orthopedic surgeons and they all look at it. And then he asked my friend, the Australian orthopedic surgeon, he said, how would you treat this injury? And my friend said, I have never in 25 years of practice even seen an injury like that. And the American doctors couldn't believe it because they see that kind of injury so frequently. Because that statistic you gave us was gun deaths, not gun injuries.
That's right.
So, I mean, that just was mind-blowing that, you know, that your average doctor, orthopedic surgeon, has seen these kind of gun injuries in the United States.
Mm. So I guess where I wanted to finish off is that after Wyambilla, which was the terrible shooting, the ambush by some form of terrorist act by 3 offenders, which resulted in their deaths, but also the deaths of 2 police officers and a Good Samaritan neighbor.
Yes.
There was a call and a commitment from the government, the federal government, for a national gun registry.
Yes.
Because there was miscommunication or no communication about revocation of licenses or red flags that may have made a difference.
Yeah. So just briefly, so there's 3 people, they're living in a remote area. And they had come from New South Wales to Queensland and one of them had a gun that wasn't properly registered in New South Wales, or the gun
it had
that
been revoked.
Revoked, but he just came to Queensland. Queensland couldn't check that. The Queensland police were going just for a welfare check, yes, weren't they? One of the relatives had said, "We're worried about what's happening."
Yes.
And so the two police officers just turn up to this farmhouse as a welfare check, and
it was an ambush.
Yeah, I think one of them was climbing over the fence, and they opened fire, and then the neighbour came out, and the neighbour was shot. Yeah,
and it was really one of those heartbreaking stories, because these were just two police officers literally doing their job to help other people, and the neighbor who didn't have to help at all so there was a commitment, and it was going to cost, or it would cost, about $200 million to digitize and nationalize the register. And that was at the end of 2022, that shooting, and we still haven't gotten any further. WA made some more restrictions within its own state last year, really wanting to ensure that these kinds of issues are minimized. But the hold up with the national register seems to be that some of the smaller states and territories can't afford to digitize, and the federal government won't pay, and so it's stalled. But in the meantime, we are having more evidence of shootings, and, you know, obviously there's opposition. Hunting and shooting parties feel like that they are unfairly targeted with gun restrictions.
Yeah. Well, the hunting and fishing party, I think they've got a seat in the Commonwealth Senate, don't they?
I think so.
They seem to be one of the minor parties who regularly get somebody into the Senate, I think.
But, I mean, comments, like there was a crossbench senator who said Australia's tough gun control laws are not based on data and were an emotional reaction to Port Arthur. I want to know what he's reading, obviously not what I'm reading.
Yep.
I think I just wanted to highlight the need to keep on with our strict gun control.
Yeah.
And I've got family who are farmers, and I said to them that I wanted to talk about this, and they're like, yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
Restrict, you know, we can control the pests with something that is legal, and, you know, there's no problem.
Yeah.
The other thing I just wanted to note was that there was a failed bill in Parliament in 2022 that wanted to reduce the age limit for hunting in New South Wales. It was hidden among a consolidated bill.
Right.
They felt that there didn't need to be a minimum age for someone to get a hunting license.
Well, I didn't know there was I didn't even know you needed a hunting license.
Yes, but they thought it would be nice for families to be able to hunt together. And so that was discovered by actually someone who I met through an animal law issue. And so she brought it to the media's attention, and it was not passed.
Right. What was the minimum age going to be?
12. No minimum age.
Oh, no minimum age.
No, no.
Wow.
But he said, or the response to that being cancelled was, it's disappointing once again we've got an ag minister caving to the animal rights movement in terms of reducing the age limit that's clearly catered to their hysterical shrieking. And I thought, oh, okay, we've still got some very passionate people about maintaining rights.
Sure, but I suppose you can hunt with things besides guns, like bows and arrows.
And look, I'm not saying get rid of every single gun in the country, but I just think let's be vigilant and aware, and let's get that national register. And
whenever you say Port Arthur, I immediately think of the massacre. But I was interested to hear your kids, two of them hadn't even heard of it.
I know.
I mean, just such a, I mean, I wouldn't even want to go to Port Arthur, even though it's a beautiful historic site, and for tourists, I'm not sure I'd be comfortable going there.
Because of the...
I suppose all the people in Port Arthur are saying, no, don't say that, because we want tourists to go there. You know, it's something that, for people who remember it, just such an enormous watershed event in Australian history.
And I think let's keep it in the forefront because we need that gun control.
Yeah, we don't want another mass shooting to change the law.
And look, I think that's probably enough
for today. And we agreed on everything, I think. We'll have to go back and listen. And probably everything in that episode we agreed on, Lizzie.
Miraculous.
Unbelievable.
I love it.
Okay. Thanks, I suppose that's all right. No problems. It's good to have a chat.
See you next week.
See ya. Thanks for tuning into this episode. You can find links to the cases that we discussed in the description. You can also find a link to Guardian Criminal Law, and a big shout out to them for making this podcast possible.
The majority of criminal cases involve people, normal people, people like you, people like me, who find themselves in an unusual set of circumstances that would not usually occur in their life. My name's Mark Savick, and I'm here to assist you with your criminal matter. I look forward to hearing from you and being of assistance to you.
If you're interested in clips, you can look at them on Instagram and TikTok. Just search for Justice Matters Pod. See you next episode.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.